Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet, 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Goethe. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar. Tor!
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. I'm your host Matthew Karagic and it is a pleasure to have your company as we take this chaotic voyage through the landmines that is the Zweite Bundesliga. On today's edition we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 28, which saw a lot of movement in the bottom half of the table. The relegation battle is going to be an absolute barnstormer as we head through the difficult months of April and May. One team lost a big advantage, whilst a sleeping giant found an important victory as they look to return to the relegation playoff spot. All that and more from this week's edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We're going to start, as we have done for the last few weeks, talking about St. Pauli first. They are the league leaders, so it is fair enough that they get to lead off the podcast every week. And until they are displaced, then at the moment it seems rather unjust to see them disappear into obscurity. They made the journey to Karlsruhe, a long journey south, hoping to get a win at the Wildparkstadion against a Karlsruhe side, hoping to get themselves back in the hunt for a playoff spot. It is a tall order for them, but they got off to the best possible start in this game. When on 2 minutes, Marcel Franke was able to be at the right place at the right time to put home the opening goal of the game. St. Pauli then looked the more likely as the half went on. Manolas Saliakas hit the woodwork from close distance, and one would argue he potentially had a little bit more time, or potentially too much time, to make a decision. His shot eventually cannoning off the woodwork. Jonas Eggestein came close. His header from a set piece was saved by Patrick Drevers, but eventually the goal would come just before the halftime break. Marcel Hartl's excellent corner finding Jackson Irvine, and the Australian international scoring his fourth goal of the season. 1-1 at the break, and a fair reflection, I think, of the game as a whole. Karlsruhe were very good in the first 15 minutes. St. Pauli then really started to take control, and that eventually led to the equalising goal. They thought they had the leading goal early in the second half through Irvine again. However, offside in the build-up took away what could have been St. Pauli's second of the game. In a game that was certainly looking like it could end 1-1, Karlsruhe were the team that found the winning formula. An excellent long ball found Fabian Schleusner, and Paul Niebel was completely unmarked at the back post. Schleusner with an easy pass and Niebel with his fourth goal of the campaign. And that was enough to give Karlsruhe all 3 points in this game. A fantastic result for KC. It means they move up to sixth in the standings. They've won 3 of their last 5 games and they're 3 games unbeaten. It also means that they are only 2 points behind Hanover. We'll talk about them in Group 2. But they're still a fair way behind. 7 points behind Dusseldorf with 6 to play. It is going to be a tall order, but we've seen strange things happen in the Zweite Bundesliga, and you wouldn't put it past them to do that. For St. Pauli, a bad week. Not a great time to lose. They still have the advantage. They're only now 2 points ahead of Kiel, who we'll talk about next. And then Dusseldorf, that gap is now down to 8. So they still got plenty of leeway. And I saw a lot of people joking that this was an intentional loss so that they could gain promotion against Haasvall in the Hamburg derby, which I doubt that was the case, but you know, let stories be stories. But St. Pauli had their chances to win the game. There's no question about it. They, you know, you can say they had to deal with a red hot goalkeeper. Sure, I mean, Drevers was good, but like, I don't think he was exceptional. He just made the saves he had to make, and you know, they just didn't have the punch to make the difference. They were without. You know, they had some players come back as well. You know, Afellain was back from injury. Saad played. You know, so it was a bit of a strange result. They just didn't have the formula. They were missing Eric Smith, who wasn't in the squad. Neither was Connor Metcalf. So yeah, look, I'm not reading too much into this result for St. Pauli. Karlsruhe are a very good team on their day. So, yeah, I guess the only frustrating thing for St. Pauli is that they won't have Halkoval for the game against Elversberg. He was sent off in this game, and I think it was a straight red, if memory serves me correct. It was a double yellow, so he will just miss the game against Elversberg. So he'll be back against Hanover on the 21st, which will be a really interesting game. But also an interesting stat that Fabian Hürzler has 7 yellow cards this season. I didn't think that was possible, but hey, you know, he's passionate. I guess some fans like it and some won't. But yeah, that's an alarming amount of yellow cards for a manager. I'd love to know what the record is in this Zweite Bundesliga. I feel like he's got it, but we'll have to look into that and maybe we'll tell you next week. But yeah, we'll see how they get on. Really good Karlsruhe performance in the end. The joke was that... you know, Christian Eichner, who, as we've spoken about before, loves to eat while he watches his team play and manages the game. Understandable. Nervous eater. Keeping himself occupied. But he wasn't even halfway through his banana before they had scored. And they always cut to him. Sky do it. Sports Show do it. Anytime he's eating, they just cut to him at the wrong times. It's like when you go and eat your food and the waiter comes to you and asks you how your food is, and you've got food all in, like, you're midway through a bite. It's rough. I feel it's funny, but yeah, he's done a great job, and I think there's a lot of reason why people are high on Eichner, and yeah, he's done some good things with Karlsruhe. It was a difficult start to the season, as we know, but they've picked it up, and if they could finish in the top six, it'd be a fantastic return, and definitely would put a lot of eyes on Eichner as a potential coaching candidate for several clubs in the Bundesliga. You could look at clubs like Borussia Mönchengladbach, for example. Werder Bremen could potentially look at a change of manager. You know, I obviously would love to see him at Karlsruhe and maybe help them gain promotion, but you know, a manager of his ability, this is his fourth season in Karlsruhe, is clearly showing that with limited money, And a really mixed bag of players, he can make them work. Obviously, the defense is a bit iffy, but they managed to hold up quite well in this game. Let's see if they can do that on Saturday afternoon when they're at Paderborn, and then they've got Hertha next on the 21st on that Sunday. So, lots to look forward to for both sides. Let's head to Nuremberg. Nuremberg hosted second place Kiel in what was built to be a really interesting encounter. One of much anticipation quickly turned into one of almost certainty that one team was going to take all 3 points. When Joseph Hungbo got his second yellow card just 12 minutes into the game, Nuremberg were going to have to play 80 minutes plus the stoppages with just 10 men. And from there, it was pretty much all Kiel. A 4-0 victory for De Storker and Marcel Rapside means they're only 2 points behind St. Pauli, and 4 consecutive wins on the bounce means they're equal best in terms of the form table over the last 5, equal with, of course, Fortuna Düsseldorf. We'll talk about them in a moment. Things really kicked off for Kiel just 20 minutes in when Marko Ivicic, the Serbian former Serbian international who really hasn't played a lot this season, he got his first goal in Kiel colours just 20 minutes in. 14 minutes later, it was 2 through Shuta Machino with an excellent right foot effort, curling into the side netting. It was a fantastic goal for him. To show that it wasn't a fluke, Alexander Berhansson, who was playing on the other side, did exactly the same thing with his left foot with 2 minutes of normal time remaining. The route was complete on 79 minutes when substitute Nikolai Remberg got his second goal of the campaign. Some excellent pressing from Kiel, which saw Remberg not only steal the ball, but then first time hit past Karl Klaus to make it 4-0. Just what you'd expect from an outfit that's in fantastic shape at the moment, like Kiel are, with all the pieces working together. They, you know, it's so easy for teams that have the man advantage to give up momentum, to give up control of the game, have a lot of meaningless possession, and leave the door open for teams that are playing poorly or who have 10 players. You give them an out. Like,
I indulged in some Premier League just before, and the Liverpool-Manchester United game was a great example of how United were a non-factor in the first half. Liverpool didn't take their chances, and then the first mistake that Liverpool made, Bruno Fernandes scores. This could have easily happened in this game, but Kiel were very much up for it. And not only were they determined to win, but there was some genuine bully ball going on. They weren't just going to win, they were going to win in dominating fashion. And excluding a period just after halftime where Lucas Schleimer had an effort save from Timon Werner as like a genuinely good chance, and Chan Ozan had an effort early in the game before they went down to 10 men, not enough to really worry about as a goalkeeper. And yeah, the numbers don't lie. I mean, 23 shots to 6 in favour of Kiel, who had essentially whatever they wanted really in terms of shot selection. We know how weak Nürnberg are defensively, and these flaws are exacerbated when you go down to 10 men. And we've seen this before with Nürnberg. When they've lost a player, the defense gets really squeezed into submission, and eventually the resistance will break. And it took 8 minutes from the red card for the resistance to break, and Kiel just essentially steamrolled them in fantastic. It was one of those performances for Kiel where, you know, from like school days or as a parent with your kids playing school sports, and they don't tell who like the ultimate best players are, they just say all played well. You can put that with Kiel. It was a really professional performance, and they are doing everything right to gain promotion. And I know that is the cursed word, the P word, but there's nothing to suggest at the moment that they can't. One of the best defenses in the league, a very strong attacking force, and as we said last week, they don't have a goal scorer who scored more than 10 goals this season. You know, Steven Skrzypski's got 9, but they've got different outlets, guys like Machino. We haven't seen much of Benedikt Pickler. You know, Alexander Benhansen, who they signed from Elfsborg in the winter. Like, I love his game as an inverted right winger. Like, he's a really good fit for them, and that it's really hard to hit on good recruiting during the winter window. And I love his game. I think he's perfect for the way they want to play football. They've sort of tweaked their system a bit. That they've got the front three, they've got Skrzypski playing as a 9, they've got Machino playing out on the left, and he seems to be a bit more comfortable playing on the left-hand side as almost as an inverted winger as well. So it's working really well for them, and I think they're in a very good position going forward. The question will be, can they sustain this with the run home? They should feel like they're a good chance against Osnabrück. Now, Osnabrück are going through their own revival again, like a second birth. You know, it was only Easter last weekend, and Osnabrück have come out. They've come out again, but then they've got Hamburg on that Saturday night. And remember, they haven't lost to Hamburg in the Zweite Bundesliga since Hamburg have been relegated. So in this iteration, so I can't wait for that game as well. I really can't. So lots to look forward to. For Nürnberg, complete wash this game. Was the second yellow harsh? It's the optics of the challenge itself. It was late. I know Hungbo's going for the ball. That is clear. But is it in a position, like, is it a dangerous play? Yes. And I don't think referee Richard Hempel had much of a choice. If you get a yellow card so early on in the game, we saw it in the Schalke game with Vogelsammer, you cannot be as aggressive. You have to be very passive in those duels, because the leeway that you think you have, you typically don't. And, you know, all credit, you know, for Hungbo's desire to get the ball, but ultimately it was an unnecessarily dangerous challenge that resulted in him getting a red card. What will they do against Schalke next week? In the top game, yes, it's a fan friendship game, but I don't think they're out of the woods just yet. They're only 5 points ahead of Magdeburg and Schalke. I don't think direct relegation is a worry. If they win next week, I would say, I'll say they're safe. But they're starting to lose form at the wrong time. Three games without a win, that's two out of their last three have been defeats. So they're definitely one to watch. They're not clear just yet. But I would say one more win might be enough. Let's see if they can go get it. Let's talk about Fortuna Düsseldorf. They were hoping to, of course, to remain in third place heading into match day 29, which is, of course, coming up. From the disappointments of losing 4-0 in the DFB Pokal semi-final to Bayer Leverkusen, their opportunity was to get back to winning ways against Eintracht Braunschweig. Braunschweig had a pretty bright start to this game. Opportunities through Ryan Philippe, Anton Doncor, and Florian Kruger were setting up Braunschweig for what they typically like to do, score first and then hit them on the break. However, a pivotal goal just before the break from Felix Klaus put pay to that. Düsseldorf really dominated after half time, and they got a penalty shortly after the break for handball. It's one of those tough ones, but once the arm sort of raises away from the body, more often than not, we are seeing penalties given. Christos Solis stepping up, and goal number 18 for the Greek international. He remains equal top of the pile with Haris Tabakovic. We'll talk about Hertha and their performance in Group 2. I think it's Group 2. Yeah, probably Group 2, if not. Yeah, I think it's Group 2. It's really hard with Braunschweig. Like, statistically, they match pretty well with the output of what Fortuna did. The big difference was obviously the less possession, which is to be expected with how Daniel Schoening sets the team up. They're set up to hit teams on the break, and a lot of their good chances came from transitional plays. But the big issue is if they go behind, then it makes things really difficult, and Thun was able to really masterstroke the game once they took the lead and forced Braunschweig to have to be a little bit braver going forward. Thought Gomez was fine off the bench. He had the chance, as did Yusuf Amin, the Iraqi international, who hit the post late in the second half. So for Braunschweig, this is a terrible result because of what happened around them. Like, it's not ideal. They dropped to 16th. They're fortunate that the next team we're going to talk about, they lost. Osnabrück are slowly sneaking up again. The results around them they were okay. But it hurts more because they've got to drop into the bottom three. We spoke about it with them at the start of the season. They were one of several clubs that we had grave concerns about their ability to score goals. And I know they scored 5 goals last week against Elversberg. I'm aware of that. But just they had quality chances in this game. You know, Fodmob, who we get our stats from, pencils them in for 3 big chances, and they missed all 3 out of the 5 shots on target. So they were able to get to the areas, just the lack of finishing. I think, it's just one of those games for them. You know what you're going to get with Braunschweig under Schoening. They have to score first. It is so crucial that they get the first goal. They didn't. Fortuna, very confident performance, and were able to put aside the disappointment of the Pokal, which they were absolutely smashed in, which I think we all saw it coming, and the next victim, cup finals obviously can do weird things, but I'm not worried if I'm Fortuna Düsseldorf at all. Not worried. So they're obviously control. Their biggest thing is the league. They control their destiny as it stands in the playoffs. Like, if the season was to end today, they play Mainz. I watched Mainz play on Saturday afternoon, and I think they're beatable. I don't know what you can say. Like, the second half was really good for them, and they scored those two late goals through Lee, and which kind of came out of nowhere. And myself and the two people that I was with who were broadcasting with South SGC Entertainment in South Korea, Lee Dong-hyun, it was G, is the other person's name? I feel really bad that I've forgotten her name. But those two were there for Lee Jae-sung, a legend of the Zweite Bundesliga with Kiel. And I think they just got really clinical towards the end of the game. And as Darmstadt were trying to get forward, yeah. So I don't think you want to play Mainz. Just as a precursor, I would rather play Bochum or Köln. That seems more of a better matchup. Although Mainz they've got interesting pieces. They've got Johnny Burkhardt, who the Mainz fans absolutely love. They love that man. Every time he touched the ball, you can see there was a different enthusiasm with the crowd. And he had this effort right near us where he tried to buy a cookie one from inside the box and he missed the ball. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. As you'd expect, Dusseldorf win. They win in the Sondertroika, which apparently is rare. They were wearing if you're wondering what the Troika, the kit was, it was the black with the grey, and part of the kit has like the bricks representing the Altstadt. Yeah, nice kit. Obviously snapped up already, so you can't buy it. But yeah, good win for Dusseldorf. They've got Wiesbaden and Fürth next, and look, they'll expect to take maximum points from those two games, and it wouldn't surprise me a bit. For Braunschweig, it gets a little complicated. They've got Hanover next week at home, Niedersachsen derby, massive game. Like, it is a ginormous game for both teams, and then they've got Osnabrück, and Osnabrück have started to rise again. So two very tricky fixtures for Braunschweig coming up. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our Group 2 games, starting with Hamburger SV and Kaiserslautern. Following the tribulations of reaching the DFB Pokal final for the first time since 2003, Kaiserslautern had a bigger task at hand, staying away from the relegation zone. Entering match day 28, they sat in 16th. Entering the game against HSV, they dropped to 17th after the results on Friday. It is critical time for Kaiserslautern. They need to start picking up points, otherwise they'll be left in the shade. They face a Hamburg side that are under immense pressure. After a lackluster month or so, Steffen Baumgart hasn't really won the fans over, much like Tim Walter did. They need to also pick up results to stay in the hunt for a third consecutive playoff spot. Now, if they do make the playoffs again, there'll be a serious Buffalo Bills vibe about it. You're here again? Oh man, how tragic. But of course, the best team to third is going to be whomever can finish there at the end of the season. An important game that was really topsy-turvy for the majority, but it was Laszlo Benes, who was super important during the Hinrunde with his goal-scoring threat from midfield. He opened the scoring on 34 minutes for his 13th goal of the season. However, that was a short-lived lead as we entered stoppage time. Ludovic Rice, who's playing as that right back, which I'm sure he absolutely loves playing right back, the best use of his talents. Anyway, he's there at the moment. He gets dispossessed. Quick transition play. Opoku finds Ragnar Ake, who's back from injury. Ake gets his 15th goal of the campaign. And look, we know how important he's going to be down the stretch. He's, you know, things progress worse for Kaiserslautern, you can't blame him. You know, they've scored 44 goals this season, and he's attributed 15 of those. So, you know, if my math is mathing, he's got more than a third of their goals this season. That's problematic, but it explains a lot. They had periods. Like, Ake almost got them ahead just after the break, and I thought they were much sharper after half time, but unfortunately they're a bit cumbersome at the back, and on the hour marker, Lukasz Pereba, who was injected into the starting lineup in place of Emmanuel Farai, who's dropped to the bench, and Pereba gets the goal, 2-1, and that's your final score. So for Hamburg, they are very much in touching distance with Dusseldorf, just a point behind. Look, they've won two of their last three. They just haven't been impressive doing so. That's just the case. I think, you know, it wasn't like a perfect performance, but they weren't looking for perfection. They were looking for a result, and they got the result. So kudos to Hamburg, who, for mine anyway, did just enough to win the game. The numbers suggest the better quality chances they produced, which I agree with. They did give up the big chances, the same number of big chances as Kaiserslautern. Kaiserslautern had more shots on goal with 20 compared to 15. Now, Hamburg have got some tough games coming up. Magdeburg, who we're talking about last, are in a bit of trouble. They've lost the ability to score goals. I won't give too much away there, but that's their big issue. So they'll feel, and they're vulnerable defensively, so they'll feel they're a really good chance in Magdeburg. Then they've got Kiel at home under the lights at the Volksparkstadion, which I am really looking forward to as a game. Can they figure this out? They obviously would love to have, you know, a full company of players going forward. You know, they really miss Ignaz van der Bremt, and there's a chance he comes back middle of the month. So he might be back for the Kiel game. They're not going to have Glatzel till essentially the final month of the season. It looks like the hip is a bit more serious than first projected, which puts a lot of pressure on the shoulders of Andras Nemeth, who has, as we've mentioned, struggled to buy a goal this season. And if Hamburg gets a goal in this run, they're going to need the goals from him. And it would probably help for him to start scoring on the weekend against Magdeburg. But we'll see. For Kaiserslautern, there are eerie parallels to the 1996 season. So back in 1995-96, Kaiserslautern won the DFB Pokal. They beat Karlsruhe by a goal to nil. They also were relegated from the Bundesliga that season in devastating fashion, which led to Otto Rehhagel and the story, and they went up, you know, they did the promotion, then they won the league. Now that's going to be really hard to do again, especially if you're going to get relegated to the Dritte Liga. They have the offensive ability to get out of this funk. I believe it. But like many of the teams, and there's a good reason why a lot of these teams are where they are, defensively, they are just very bad. In fact, they are the worst. Worse than Osnabrück, worse than Schalke. You know, a lot worse than teams like Hansa Rostock, Braunschweig, and Wiesbaden. Their problem's clear. They don't score enough goals. Worse than Magdeburg, who for a period were actually one of the best defensive teams in the league, and you wouldn't have known it because they don't play like that. These next two games are gigantic. The Fürth game on Friday night is a season-defining game for them, because Fürth are in real trouble. And if it wasn't for their good start to the season, they would absolutely be in the relegation fight. No question. I think they're safe. I think they've got enough points. But they are having what feels like a historically bad Rückrunde, I should say. We'll talk about that and then their game against Osnabrück later on. So the pressure's on Freedom Funkel, who there was talk about him potentially staying around for next season. But I don't think he's staying around if they get relegated. And I don't think there would be an impetus to keep that. He was there to be the firefighter. He's there to get them out of trouble. The Pokal is, they were playing at house money. They've had a fantastic Pokal run, culminating in beating Saarbrücken in the semi-final and ending their magical run. So change needs to happen, and it needs to happen quickly. They need to find a way to stop leaking goals, and they need to find something. I don't know what that is, but they need cohesion, a team that's on the same level. Like, look, it's not dire. It's not like what Ajax did yesterday against Feyenoord, where they basically just gave up. Like, it's not that bad, but you know, I think a lot of people thought, and I'm included, thought they might be better. Maybe not like top five, but at least, you know, mid-table. I think I had them 13th, which I thought was realistic. They can still finish there, but yeah, they, you know, this is going to be the classic part of the relegation battle. It's going to be very much week to week, so lots to look forward to. But yeah, that game against Fürth is massive. A massive game at the Heinz von Heiden Arena featured Hannover and Schalke, two teams that have pretty big standing in terms of German football. One team that is trying to remain in the hunt for the promotional playoff, the other trying to avoid a catastrophic double relegation. It was a massive game that wasn't lost on coach Karl Geratz, and of course Stefan Leitl, who has been in tasked with the Hannover project in year two. They have shown improvement, but will they have enough to get to the playoff? We'll wait and see. I genuinely think Schalke were really good in the opening 20 minutes. I like their intensity. Obviously, their passing leaves a lot to be desired, but typical build-up play. They were able to transition the ball quite well. They put Hannover under pressure, but they lacked the final finish until one young player in Asan Ayodrogu, who produced an absolute moment of magic. His desire to win the ball back on the near side touchline, I think, in front of Stefan Leitl's coaching dugout, and then just dribble his way through the Hannover defense and produce a stellar finish. It was a wonderful goal, a real treat. The words don't really match. Like, it was such a stellar goal for a player who's missed a chunk of the season because of injury with the U17 national team. But he's such a special player. And I think regardless of what happens at the end of the season, it will be very hard for Schalke to keep him, especially with the finances. You know, if a club offers them an offer they can't refuse, it's going to be a shame to see him leave, because he's a hell of a player. Like, the short glimpses that we've seen of him this season, there was a reason why we saw him on match day one. He's got some real talent on the offensive end. He's still, of course, building back from injury, so he only played, I think it was about 64 minutes, but he was great. In the time that he was on, he was fantastic. The problem is this Schalke team gets a little bit indecisive, and then they start to, they're not really sure what to do. So they sit deep. They let Hannover really control. And for the most part, like, Schalke defended really well. The back four, especially Merkin and Kallas, were really good. Merkin was good getting forward. But for whatever reason, as the game progressed, there was the sense of inevitability that they were going to concede. And they did. And the concession is, well, you know, Karl Geratz has still got a bit of hair, but it would be enough to tear most of it out. From an offensive throw-in inside your own third of the pitch, to let Cedric Toikert essentially run from the edge of the 18-yard box to the other 18-yard box, untouched, is really poor. Now, I understand the guys who are chasing him don't have the athleticism nor the speed to keep up with Toikert. That was clear. And in the end, Toika doesn't get the goal because it's Seguin who makes the challenge, and it does enough to deceive Marius Müller. They looked gassed, but fatigue is part of football. It happens. But the manner, like, just not enough numbers coming back to help support. They still defensively had a 3-on-3. And, like, they managed to just let him do what he wanted. And he was shooting. And, you know, Seguin attempted to make the right play, just got it wrong. Which is a shame for him. But, you know, I think it was always going to be hard for Schalke to hold on. And it felt like that as the game progressed. There was just, like, they were just holding on. Like, they were trying so hard to just keep the point, you know, keep the 3 points. Then it was keep the point. And Hannover pushed late. And you sort of, if you were a Schalke fan, you'd have the sick feeling of, like, we're about to concede again. This is like the Hoffenheim Bayer Leverkusen game from a week ago. You just could sense that they've scored. Are they going to score again? And fortunately for Schalke, they didn't. Now, on a weekend where only two teams in the bottom six. Let's see, my math is 2, 4, 6, 7 teams. Sorry, counting on the fly. Only two of the bottom seven won on the weekend. But in a league where 12 to 17 is separated by just 3 points, every point is vital. Okay, it's a good point against a good Hannover team. Yes, they have 3 draws in their last 4 games, but they have to start winning. Winning matters. And the draws are just not enough at the moment. Maybe later in the season these draws will matter. But the game against Nürnberg coming up, and then Elversberg, two teams that are not in good form at all. These are opportunities. These are massive opportunities for Schalke. But I don't know if this team has it in them. And that is the alarming thing about the whole situation. Do you trust the mentality of this team? Is Carol Gerrits the right coach? I like Carol Gerrits. I think he's a really good coach. But just this squad build-up is not the squad you'd want for his skill set and the way he wants them to play football. So it's very basic they play at the moment. It's all about fighting. It's all about, you know, bringing intensity. It's almost not even about the football. It's about the mental aspects of the game to get these guys to fight for the jersey, fight for the crest, fight for the many thousands of fans that travel to Hannover today. Like, it was impressive, but you would expect nothing less from a massive club like Schalke. So let's see. They need some results. They need, for me, based on the points, 7 or 8 points. That'll be enough. If they can accumulate 7, let's say 8 points, get us to 40. 8 points in the next 6. That seems achievable. But the question is, it all comes down to the defense for them. Can that defense hold up? They've improved slightly, but it's a big ask. For Hannover, disappointing. They'll be disappointed because after the slow start, they really dominated the game. They limited Schalke's chances, but the issue for them was that they struggled to break down Schalke defensively, which was a massive shock. And it took a counter-attacking move from Toika to break the deadlock. So, you know, look, Hannover have gone through, look, they're unbeaten in the last 5, but it is a funk. It's not the kind of results you'd expect from a team that are trying to keep up the pace with Fortuna, with Hamburg, and they're there. So let's see what they do in the next 2 games. You know, Eintracht Braunschweig is massive. That Niedersachsen derby is big for both teams. And then St. Pauli at home. on a Sunday afternoon. They could really throw the cat amongst the pigeons if they beat St. Pauli and bring Kiel and bring everyone else into the mix again. We'll see if they can do that. To end Group 2, let's talk about two teams that have a Stephen Bradbury's chance of making the promotional playoff game. That's Paderborn and it's Hertha BSC. Now, Hertha entered this match under a bit of pressure. A journalist from Kicker asked a reasonable question to Pau Dardai. And Pau, who had obviously read a piece that this particular journalist, who I've obviously forgotten the name of, talked about Hertha not really having an identity, a DNA, a tactical DNA. And Dardai took offense to this and walked out of the press conference before the team was to head to Paderborn. A really embarrassing situation and not a good look. And left Fabi Riza and the press officer to do all of the rest of the conference. So, look, not a perfect start. And then obviously things get worse when they start the game and Rafael Obermeier, with an excellent free kick on 16 minutes, gets the goal. The thing that Hertha did really well in this game was the fight back from adversity. After conceding the free kick and the goal, moments later they equalised. Kai Clearfish had an absolute mess trying to just move the ball on, picked off by Parko Dardai, and Dardai lays it off to Armin Barkok, who gets his first Zweite Bundesliga goal of the season. Really good transitional play. Did what they had to do. The game sort of just ebbed and flowed a bit. I think Paderborn looked okay. They certainly looked more on it in the middle phases of the game. But they get the set-piece goal on 59 minutes. Visar Misliu with an excellent header thanks to an excellent ball in from Aaron Zentner. Zentner's second assist of the season. So at 2-1, there's two ways you can go about it. You can go for the third and put the game out of reach, which as a coach for a good chunk of the game, from 59 to say maybe 80, absolutely, we're going for it. We're going to go get a third goal. This is just my opinion. And they looked like they were doing this, but then they immediately switch off at a period of time, and that's when Hertha gets the equaliser. Jondre Kenny finds Bilal Hussein. Hussein gets his first goal of the season. A really good finish, first time. They were checking if the ball had crossed the byline, and it had not. So good decision, took a little bit of time, but we got the right decision. So now at 2-2, you got two options. You can go for the win or protect the advantage. They try to go for the win, they get caught out, and Ibrahim Maza finds Haris Tabakovic at the back post, and Tabakovic taps in from close range. It's his 18th goal of the season, equal with, of course, Christos Zolis and the Bosnian Herzegovina international. If he's not an international, he should be. He continues his excellent streak at the season, and three valuable points for Hertha. It means that Hertha are sitting in seventh, a point off Karlsruhe, but still, you know, a ways. I think they're, 8 points behind Dusseldorf in third, so not looking likely that they're going to be in the hunt. But obviously for them, you know, they want to end the season positively and head into 2024-25 with a better chance of promotion. I think a lot of the discourse really on what's going to happen at Hertha is really around Pau Dardai. Is this the coach you trust to lead a promotion push? They've shown offensively they can be really good. 56 goals this season. That's a one behind Karlsruhe. It's more than Hamburg. It's more than St. Pauli, who lead the league. It's, you know, only really behind Karlsruhe and Dusseldorf. So they've got the offensive talent. What separates them is the defense. In the teams in the top half, they're equal worst defensively with Paderborn. That is the difference. That is what is separating them. And it's quite interesting because they've got a lot of experience. Guys like Tony Leisner, Mark Oliver Kempf. But they have shown that they are... They think they're a better team with Martin Dardai and Linus Gechter as the centre-back pairing, with Jondre Kenny on the right and Mikhail Karbovnik, who hasn't had a particularly good season in Berlin. I think we can agree with that, which has been a shame because he was great at Düsseldorf. But alas, that is the situation for them. They've got a World Feed game coming up. They've got Hansa Rostock on Friday night. A massive game for both, well, massive for Rostock, but for Hertha, who just want to keep the good times rolling, and you never know, you could find yourself in the position. For Paderborn, it's three defeats on the bounce, and you'd say that that's them done for the season. So another season in mid-table, and I think this creates a really interesting conversation of how sometimes you can get bored being a mid-table team. We saw many years ago, Paderborn were the ultimate yo-yo team. They would go up a few divisions, then they'll go down a few divisions and come back up again, and you know, very wild situation as a team. But some of their losses have been really bizarre, and this was no different. Like they were in a really good position to win the game. And they had so many more chances. They got themselves into great areas. You know, they double the shots on goal to Hertha, but Hertha took all their big chances. They were efficient in front of goal, and they cut open Paderborn late, and that was the difference in the game, really. Shot efficiency, and you know, it's a killer for Paderborn, because they're good enough. I think we've shown in sustained patches they can be a very good team, challenging, and we know that they're not packing the big budgets like a lot of the other teams in the division, so they usually are punching above their weight. But they'll be really disappointed to give this one away. I think they should have won this game, in my opinion, but you know, got to finish your chances, as they say. Let's see if they can get back to winning ways on the weekend, when they've got Karlsruhe on Saturday afternoon, which should be a really entertaining game, not only just tactically, but both teams, as mentioned, they can find the back of the net. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our final three games, starting at the Ostsee Stadion when Hansa Rostock hosted VNV Spartan. A classic relegation six-pointer to kick off match day 28, and of course our Group 3 games, was Hansa Rostock and VNV Spartan. Wiesbaden had absolutely fell off a cliff, whilst Rostock were trying to rebuild. Entering match day 28, Hansa Rostock sat in 17th place. Yes, they had lost the week before, but they'd won two of the last three, giving them a bit of confidence against a Wiesbaden side that have just completely just dissipated. It's clear that Wiesbaden are very much in the relegation fight now, and the pressure is on both sides to avoid the drop back to the Dritte Liga. Really, a first half that was a bit even. I mean, both teams had chances. I think Wiesbaden had the better chances through Pratayan and Vukotic. Marcus Kolker, of course, was fantastic in this game, bar the one blip, which we'll talk about in a sec. So, nil-nil at the break, and there was a real feeling of, well, it's open. Whoever wants to take the game can go win it. 54 minutes into the game, 51 minutes, I should say, Rostock took the advantage. A brilliant ball in from Simon Ryan set piece, and Damien Rosbach headering home just for his second goal of the season, but an important goal in the context of the game. Then moments later, it got a lot worse for Wiesbaden when they went down to 10 men after Jakobsen fouled, I think it was Nico Neidhart. It was a bad challenge. Like, there's no other way. And Bjarke just... he knew it when it happened. He'd made a big mistake. And Niklas Vinter, the referee, after a bit of a thought. Straight red card, so he'll miss the next 2 to 3, I think it's 2 games. And you know, he's an important part of their midfield setup. He's a bit of a destroyer, and just a horrible tackle. I understand why he did it, because Neidhart's got the turn of pace, gets the ball forward. Rostock showed some really good signs in transition, but just the context of the game, even as an attempted professional foul, once you studs up, tackle from behind that calf area, you're always asking for trouble. So I don't think anyone could begrudge the straight red card. I will say that they did have periods. So like, they made a couple of changes during the second half that seemed to work in terms of getting the ball forward. So bringing on Gopal and Iredale just after the hour mark, they looked a little bit more dynamic. They had a bit more pace on the, you know, in the game. Iredale has that chance, which forced a really good save from Colquhoun. You know, they were giving it a go. They were really pushing for an equaliser, and it seemed like they could do it. Unfortunately, the second goal they give up, which is through Kai Puga, will be really upsetting, because Rostock really, they win the ball in sort of the right corner flag to the near side of their defence. And two passes, and Svante Engelsson suddenly is in a one-on-one with his defender, and Proger is lending support on the right-hand side. The picture is brilliant because there's about four Wiesbaden players who are all in the same area, all giving chase. And the pursuit was hopeless because Engelsson puts in a great ball, and Proger, first time, says thank you very much. Proger was great. Engelsson was great in this game. They do get a goal back, though. The cross coming into the box from, I think it was Keenan Bennett, who just come on as a sub. Kolker had to be a little bit more commanding. He parries it into the worst spot, and Patayan goes to double figures. 10 goals this season, and if you compare what Wiesbaden have produced this season, 31, you know, he's nearly got a third of their goals, so he's been massive for them. Good instincts, good goal, 2-1. They still pushed for that equalizing goal, but the third goal would come for Hansa, this time Engelsson, who'd put in a real shift in the game. He gets his first goal of the season, surprisingly. And 3 valuable points for Mirsad Selimbegovic's side. Firsts. It's the first time since match day 15 that Hansa Rostock have been out of the bottom three. That's a long time in the bottom three for them. It's also the first time they've scored more than a single goal in a game. Win, lose, loss, or draw. That was the 2-2 draw against Haasvel when they'd parted ways with Tim Walter. So, big result for Hansa, and it puts them, they're the last team to survive if the season was to end today. They've won 3 of their last 5, and you compare the teams around them, form-wise, you know, they're better than most of the teams from 8th down. So, you know, they're equal with Osnabrück. They've peaked. Now, obviously, there'll be people who say, have they peaked too early? We'll find out. Let's see what they can do against Hertha. Hertha have got a very powerful attack, but if they can put the work in on Fabian Riza, they've got a chance, because he's their outlet. You limit his production, you make someone else try and win the game for them. And how they defend Haris Tabakovic, the man knows how to get into a good spot. Nullify those guys, they're a chance of getting something. Points are good at this point, and then they've got Magdeburg in another relegation 6-pointer. Huge. Some big games, and they can get a result. For Wiesbaden, the downfall has been drastic. Like, just the inability to take points. I don't think they were bad per se in this game, but I never felt like they had control. They had like little spurts of they would squeeze a chance in, or they would, but they never felt like they controlled the game. I never got the impression that they were heading in the right direction. And it's, yeah, it makes you wonder, because those games coming up, Fortuna Düsseldorf, as at home, it's possible, but I don't feel good about it. Kaiserslautern away, that is a massive six-pointer. Like, we can't, like, that weekend has got some massive games already, and that's just another one of them. And then it's Fürth, who are on a massive slump. Like, so there's two of the next three games that they'll feel they can take points in. But can they score? The frequency. Okay, so, like, they have got, what, the fourth worst attack in the division. We knew that goals were going to be a struggle for them this season. And that has proven to be the case. So, you know, defensively, like, they're the best defensive team in the bottom half of the table, and comfortably so. So they've got that going for them, but they, you know, even then it was rare that to see them concede three. So yeah, pressures on Marcus Kalczynski, that they went from being very comfortable to things are getting a little bit nervous to squeaky bum time. This is where we're at now with Wiesbaden. Two teams that are, well, they've had differing forms, but one is still bottom. That's Osnabrück. They welcomed Greuther Fürth on Sunday afternoon to the Bremerbrücke. And Fürth, who have just been in an absolute calamity of form of late, they need some serious help. And it doesn't matter what you try and do, I don't think anyone knows how to fix them. I'm not saying things are going to change, but they, I thought they played very well for Osnabrück in the first half. The opening goal came 3 minutes into the game. Robert Tescher finding Erik Engelhardt, his 10th goal of the campaign. And look, he's had a good season for someone who's never played in the Zweite Bundesliga. He's in fact scored more goals this season than he managed. He's almost scored more goals this season than he managed in two seasons in the Dritte Liga. So that's positive. And if there were teams looking for a striker next season, you know, he'd be someone you would look at. The second goal was just embarrassing. Haddadi, who was unsurprisingly yanked at halftime, he coughs the ball up to Bashkim Adini. Adini finds Christian Conte, and Conte makes it goals in consecutive games for VfL. The game just kind of hit a lull the second half. The two teams played a game of football. Fürth had a lot of the ball in the second half. They were able to get some shots up. But Philipp Kühn was good. And look, you know, a lot of the fortune around Osnabrück has really centered around his goalkeeping. His goalkeeping's been fantastic. And that was no different here. And you can't put a price on good goalkeeping, says the ex-goalkeeper. But if you look at the form now, okay, so they're doing this again. They're back in form. They've won three of their last five. They're only 6 points away from a playoff spot. It can be done. It absolutely can be done, but their next games are difficult. Holstein, they're playing Holstein Kiel, arguably the worst time. Kiel have won four on the bounce. And, you know, as good as Osnabrück's form is, it's not exactly who you want to play right now. After that, they play Braunschweig at home. And then they play Magdeburg. There's some points to be had here for Osnabrück. I think there's a real good chance. And then what they've got, Schalke, another relegation six-pointer. And then at St. Pauli. So, and ending the season at Hertha. So the next month for Osnabrück are gigantic. There are three of the six games against teams in the same position as them. 9 points at this stage will get them to 33. Do I think that's enough? Not a chance. I think the magic number is guaranteed safety is 38. But if we're talking relegation playoff spot, let's say 34. So they would need 10 points. And look, this is all hypothetical, so bear with me. Let's say they need 10 points from the next six games. It's a tall order for a team that scored 24 points in 28 matches. Even though a lot of their wins, all of their wins, I think, or most of their wins, sorry, have come from Uwe Koshinat. I just don't see it. And I haven't seen it all season. 27 goals this campaign is a paltry return. And yes, we did see Hansa Rostock and Nürnberg score 32 goals last season and survive. But when you teamed with the third worst defense in the league, yeah, I don't want to put a downer on it because they were good. The first half, they were fantastic. I really liked what Osnabrück did. You know, they were okay not having the ball. They were super efficient, and they got the two goals they scored were from inside the six. You couldn't get better looks. And they did, and they defended resolutely. There were times that they kind of fell asleep. It felt like they fell asleep at the wheel, but you know, they still got the result, and that's really all that matters in this game. For them, they're all about points accumulation, and it's hard to knock a team that finds a way to win games, especially in situations when it doesn't look likely. So for Osnabrück, this is all they have to do. They're just going to keep accumulating points and hope the teams above them falter. The luxury is that they will play three of the teams in that bottom seven. That's where the points will be had. Right, let's talk about Fürth, because this is a big problem. So they've won three games in the Rückrunde. Three wins, a draw, and the rest have been defeats. Those defeats include a 4-0 loss, a 4-1 loss, 3-2 loss to St. Pauli, and now you've got a 2-0 to Osnabrück. Their defeats, so St. Pauli, Hertha, Hanover, fine, acceptable. This was, you know, they beat Kiel, they beat Paderborn, but their team, like, their season is like a massive, like, flowchart of ups and downs. So from match day 11 to match day 19, they went on, what, a 9-game unbeaten run? And since then, they have won once in their last, it looks like, 8 or 9 games. Like, let's get some... I understand they've got one of the younger squads in the division. We accepted this at the start of the season. But also, you have to acknowledge that some of these guys aren't going to be here next season. Your Tim Lempeles, your Jonas Urbigs, your Robert Wagners. These guys are all here on loan. They're here to get experience for their parent clubs, be it Köln, Freiburg. At some stage, they need to find something sustainable. They are not finding anything sustainable. The last time they kept a clean sheet, if you were wondering, match day 18 against Paderborn. And that was when I was very much singing about how great Jonas Urbig is. I still think he's going to be great, but you look at what's in front of him, and I'll be honest, a life jacket is all he needs at the moment. Fortunately, they play Kaiserslautern. But the way they're going, I don't know. It's a massive game on Friday night. In the context of the season, they have to win on the weekend. They win. Look, they're pretty much safe. They're 9 points ahead of Braunschweig in 16th. But just to get a little bit of confidence in the team, the win is vital for them. Then they've got Düsseldorf afterwards. So a couple of big games for Alexander Zorniger's side, as he still tries to prove that his coaching credentials are legitimate for Fürth, not only just in the short term, but the medium and long term as well. Lastly, let's talk about Magdeburg, who have been on a bit of a slump of late. If you remember, they beat Schalke 3-0 earlier in the Rückrunde. an impressive performance, we all thought, and fairly so. The first half was electric on match day 23. But did you know they went through the entire month period from March 9th to March 31st without a goal? In fact, March 3rd to March 31st. So Magdeburg did not have a goal of the month competition because, well, there was none. In that period, they conceded 11 goals, which included the 7 heading into the last international break at Karlsruhe. So they made the jump to Elversberg. An important juncture in both teams' season. Elversberg really close to surviving, sitting on 35 points entering the match day. For mine, very close. A win would be enough, or at least close enough, to gain survival. And as the only promotion team that's not really in the relegation battle, this would have been a good step for Horst Steffen's side. For Magdeburg, it is clear. They must get back to winning ways. They have been dragged into the relegation fight. The question is, are they good enough to get out of it? Well, I'm going to keep this one short because I've gone a bit longer than usual by myself. Both teams had chances. Lucas Schnellbacher and Brian Teixeira, especially in the second half, had the best chances. Both times keepers were fantastic. Christoph and Ryman, very good. It was a frustrating game for both teams. It was, and the stats like perfectly line it up what the game was. Both teams had ebbs and flows. I think Elversberg's patches were a bit stronger. Quality chances seemed a little bit few and far between for teams that have shown to have the offensive touch in front of goal. Well, to an extent, I should say. Their weaknesses are both defensively. You know, both teams have given up big goal margins, but it seemed like neither team was really capable of finishing off their work. It's been a tricky spell for Elversberg. They had this patch heading into their winter break where they lost a bunch of games and it seemed like the magic was wearing off. And you know, they've won once in their last 5 games this season, during this patch. So it hasn't been perfect. But what they have done is, you know, limit the games where they're getting absolutely, it feels like they're being outplayed. And it was, like, it's not bad. I don't think what they've done was bad in this game. I think they, for me, they probably didn't do enough to win the game as a whole. Like, they had a real tough time breaking down Magdeburg's defense. And I think it was Schnellbacher and maybe Varner or Vandermeersch had like a really good chance forcing the save from Ryman. But other than that, it never really felt as if there was anything concrete with what they were doing. And similar to Magdeburg, like they had the Teixeira chance, which he really should have finished. Like he did the right thing first time. But you know, I'll credit Christoph for making himself quite big. But yeah, it's pretty similar for Elversberg when you think about it. So if you just take the month of March as the sample, one win, which was a 4-1 against Fürth, but 3-0 defeat at home to Wiesbaden, 2-0 home to Kiel, fine, and then the 5-0 away loss. So equally poor defensive effort. And look, the Braunschweig game, they gave up those 2 goals in the stoppage time, which were inexcusable given the situation. So look, their next 2 games are massive. St. Pauli away is tough, especially after they lost on the weekend. Then Schalke at home. First time welcoming Schalke to the Kaiserlinde. Important game. For me, they can, in the next 2 weeks, they could guarantee survival in getting the magic number. But they could also, let's hypothetically, they lose the next 2 games. They're in the relegation battle again. You would think, if other teams pick up points. Magdeburg, similar. They got Hamburg at home. Massive game. They could dent Hamburg's promotion playoff push and strengthen their survival. Then they've got Rostock away in that massive six-pointer and Ost Derby. This is proving to be probably one of the biggest tests for Christian Tietz. When he joined Magdeburg many years ago, they were in a relegation battle. He kept them up, built them, promoted, and then they survived last season. Now he's got to try and keep them up again. And we know the great football that they produce, but the question is, do they have the mental quality to overcome what has been a very difficult period? And I think a lot of the pressure will alleviate if they can score a goal. And that's all it comes down to for mine. And with that, we should say goodbye. Thank you for listening. I do apologize if it sounds like I've been a bit more monotone, a bit reserved in the vocals. The hotel I'm in recording is, let's say the rooms are very close, and I'm trying to be very mindful of the guests. I don't want to upset anyone. So I do apologize if that's the case. Thank you again for listening. And I'll see you next week to discuss all of the action from match day 29. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy life, you know, because, you know, life is worth living and life can be fun. And I'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.